Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 11:57 a.m. and today is November 26th. I thought I would kick off today and look at the Bombay Banks Index, because while the Indian market wasn't quite able to hold on to all of the gains, then the banking sector did do better, and it is at a new all-time high. Part of the reason for that is because Narendra Modi is finally pushing through labor reforms in India. This is something that I think a lot of investors thought was never going to happen, but he has an insurmountable majority in Parliament. This is a once almost in a lifetime opportunity for any party to be able to push through the kinds of reforms required to stimulate industrial growth. India has got hundreds of millions of young people that need jobs, and the only possible way that that is going to happen is if they can build up a manufacturing base. And considering that India has long had a higher value-added manufacturing base, long been a center for producing pharmaceuticals, for example, but what it needs is labor-intensive industries. Such as clothing, for example, or jewelry manufacturing. These are the kinds of activities that could certainly help to stimulate growth. Then, of course, you need heavy industry, because India absolutely needs additional infrastructure. And infrastructure development goes very much hand in hand with the building out of a manufacturing base. Streamlining planning is going to be one of the next big obstacles to tackle. But what we're being presented with in India today is a raft of reforms that have been introduced in less than 6 weeks, whether that is at the on the one hand it is cutting corporate taxes, then there was the willingness to run a fiscal deficit, then we have the movement to streamline the banking sector. Then there has been additional efforts announced to try and force some of the non-bank lenders into bankruptcy, to try and bring to an end that liquidity crisis that has affected that particular sector. Now we have labor reforms. These are momentous events, and I think part of the reason why we're not getting more interest in the Indian market is because of its valuation. Then, of course, we have the fact that the rupee is still trading weaker than its trend mean, but it was stronger in here today. I think that the last thing India wants is a stronger currency, but the second last thing that they want is a currency that is weakening precipitously. There is the clear potential here that India is on the cusp of doing what everyone has been waiting for it to do for decades, and that is potentially going to, cement its position as a growth leader in an era where we have got, very low interest rates, a country that has got a reasonably stable currency and a government bond yield of 6.5%, then that's the kind of thing that is going to attract inward investment from foreign investors, and most particularly if governance is seen to continue to improve. And I think we can draw the simple conclusion that governance is improving rather rapidly in India right now. Then, of course, I think there is the additional point that commodity prices are not at a challenging level at present. But copper, for example, was strong in here today. It's still, however, a fraction of where it was trading back in 2011. I think it was interesting that Robert Friedland was quoted as saying that Congo is now one of the most exciting areas to develop copper. Of course, he is taking a swipe at Chile by making that kind of statement. When we then look at what's going on in the Chilean market, well, the stock market is continuing to pull back. When we then think about what's going on in Brazil, the Brazilian central bank intervened today to try and support the currency. The Bovespa was a little bit weaker in here today, but that should be supported by the weakness of the currency in nominal terms, at least. And the intervention by the Brazilian central bank didn't do much to curtail the decline. That doesn't mean that the central bank can't intervene again. It does look like they are trying to support the currency around the region of its historic lows. And we haven't seen it at levels like this since 2015. But there is a clear movement here. There are people starting to string together the weakness we're seeing in a number of Latin American markets. And the Mexican market was also in negative territory in here today. And it has been just about steady in the region of the trend mean. There has been a sequence of lower rally highs. And if it sustains a move below the 42,000 level, then I think people are going to conclude that this is just another step downwards in terms of the performance of the market. I've been, I think, rather surprised, really, at the strength of the Mexican peso. But there is very clearly a triangular pattern evolving over the last 12 months. And generally speaking, when these triangular patterns are resolved, you get really very dynamic moves. I'm rather thinking that it is quite likely we're going to see a devaluation of the Mexican peso. All of these countries have been battling slowing economic growth, but also the rise of populism. That's been particularly a challenge for Chile, because they don't have a populist opposition party, and that has contributed to social unrest. Of course, we've had the success of Bolsonaro in Brazil, which was the market-friendly success of a right-wing populist. Of course, in Mexico, there has been the success of a left-wing populist. That's part of the reason why the stock market has been weak, but it's been also, I think, also clear that he has been rather hands-offish with regard to the economy, and that has probably been the factor that contributed to the stability of the currency, although one has to question how long that is going to last. When we look at some of the individual commodities, coffee prices were a little weaker in here today, but they've been up in a very dynamic manner over the course of just the last couple of weeks. But the most important thing is that it has broken the downtrend. And we now have broken the sequence of lower rally highs that's been in place for nearly 3 years. So, yes, we do have a short-term overbought condition. There's potential for some pause of consolidation, but this is one of the most significant moves we've had in the coffee market in quite some time. Lumber has also been making headlines because of its strength, but I think we do need to look at the weekly chart to put into context that the price is still a fraction of where it was back in early 2018. It wasn't quite able to hold on to its advance in here today. So I think we are in for some consolidation. I think the arbiter of whether this is a new demand-dominated environment is going to be in how well it holds the region of the trend mean. The supportive news in here today was that U.S. Used home sales was the highest two-month period in at least a decade. So that is rather supportive of the view that U.S. growth may in fact be troughing. When we then think about the S&P 500, it's at a new all-time high. Now, we certainly have a short-term overbought condition, but it is worth remembering that when we see a market that has been range-bound for 18 months, then it's quite easy for a market to become overextended on the upside. And it is likely that the surprises are going to be on the upside. China continues to make positive noises about the potential for a a hiatus or a deal to be arranged for in regard to the trade war. The stock market there remains really quite calm, and that's unlikely to last. The renminbi is still weaker than 7 and was a little bit weaker again in here today. What is also interesting is that there is now about $750 billion worth of Chinese issued US dollar bonds. That's substantially above the $450 billion that had been issued before they banned the issuance of US dollar debt about 2 years ago. The central bank had become really quite alarmed at the quantity of debt that had been accrued by local governments. What we're now starting to see is that on the same day that there was record demand for a $6 billion issue of debt, we've also seen the first default of a state-owned issuer of US dollar-denominated debt. So I think that really should help to ram home the point that Chinese debt is not without risk. And the clear potential is that if the renminbi continues to weaken, that is going to put an increasingly large number of those issuers under duress. So I think China needs a deal more than the USA does. Quite whether they are willing to admit that is another story entirely. But the rise of a protest movement in Hong Kong and the real potential that trouble is going to flare up again when no concessions are being made by Carrie Lam in her speech in here today. The abuse or the potential that the population is going to be disabused of their view that they have any kind of democratic right does have the potential for trouble to flare up again. And I think that is something that cannot be discounted. When we look at the Hang Seng, it was in negative territory in here today, and it absolutely needs to hold the 25,000 level. And the fact that it is now stuffed with the shares of state-owned companies, I think, is rather worth paying attention to. It's no longer really an arbiter of what's likely to happen in Hong Kong. 10 cent is probably a much better barometer for what sentiment is like, and it has encountered resistance in here in the region of the trend mean, and there still is this sequence of lower rally highs so far this year. Alibaba did do well in trading off its IPO in Hong Kong in here today. That potentially is why we had some weakness on the Hang Seng, because some money could get siphoned out of it to invest in a domestic issue for or as Alibaba returns to the Hong Kong market would probably be the best way of describing it. When we then think about what's going on in the UK, I thought there was a rather interesting graphic in here that I saw earlier on in here today, and it was the demographics of the Conservative Party versus the Labour Party. The problem that I think a lot of political strategists are going to have to come to terms with is that the Labour Party is a young party and the Conservative Party is an older party. That's something that is very much in the Conservatives' favour in the short term, because older people are more reliable voters. They do tend to turn up at the polling station, but it's not a long-term solution. And this is, I think, one of the most important points that a number of parties, particularly in the UK, but also in Germany or in the USA for that matter, need to come to terms with. The most successful parties over the last few years have singularly failed to appeal to younger voters. The FTSE 100 continues to steady above this 7,000 level. It's been my view for the last few years that this is just a first step above the base. The pound is a little weaker in here today, but it continues to look like just a range. I think the likelihood is that Boris Johnson is probably going to be the next prime minister. I think his timetable for trying to agree a trade deal with the EU of less than a year is ambitious at best, foolhardy at worst. There is no real appetite in Parliament to leave the EU without a trade deal in place. The transition agreement is really just an agreement on a starting point for negotiations. These kinds of trade negotiations can take years. So there is the real potential that once an election is out of the way and promises have been made, then we can get back to normal politics where promises tend to get broken. And it suggests that the transition agreement, once passed in Parliament, could last for at least a few years. I think it is very unlikely that we're going to get a hard break in terms of Brexit. There is the real possibility that the transition agreement, which is membership in all but name, could potentially become indefinite in nature. And that is, I think, something that the market is pricing in. It's one of the primary reasons, I think, that the pound remains reasonably well bid. It's the outcome that investors have been most keenly attuned to. Every time it has looked likely that the pound or the UK would remain closer to the EU, the pound has rallied, and the pound has been rallying for most of the last 3 months. It's right at the upper side of its base against the euro. Now the question is, what is going to happen in terms of the election? What is going to happen in terms of getting this transition agreement passed in Parliament? And then what will be the plan of the next government to try and reinvigorate the economy? Because they are going to have to tackle some of the primary issues that are assailing future voters. The problem with depending on an older demographic is that they'll eventually die off. And if the concerns of the younger people haven't been addressed, then that is going to represent a threat in terms of the ballot box in future. And these are the kinds of questions. Is how long is it going to take for that disparity to be reflected in voting preferences? Well, it probably won't be in this election, but it could very well be in the next one. We are at the upper side of the range for the pound right now, so there is the potential that we're going to get at least some consolidation. But what I do think is important here with regard to investments is that we're seeing an increasingly large number of shares and indices pushing on to new high ground, or testing the upper side of their respective ranges, or breaking down trends. And that's all supportive of further, I think, bullish activity. Then we have one of the most important factors is that the Federal Reserve has been increasing the size of their balance sheet. That has been in direct response to an emergency, really, in the repo market. There is likely to be additional demand for funding as we approach the end of the year. That's potentially going to further stimulate demand for a Santa Claus rally, which generally starts to get going around this time of the year. I think it's quite likely that it may already be underway. The Nasdaq Biotech Index is also worth considering because it is highly cyclical in nature, and it has now broken its year-long downtrend. It's being stimulated both by M&A activity, but also by the fact that CRISPR technology is increasingly being commercialized. And the lead time between the invention of the the gene editing technology and the commercialization of therapies in trial studies is so very short. It's only within the last 3 years. Well, that's, I think, one of the good examples of just how quickly innovation is coming to the technology sector. And it is going to create value, and particularly for healthcare, when we look at what are the problems in terms of affording the promises that have been made to people. Well, healthcare is a massive cost, and trying to do anything to either improve outcomes or create greater efficiency is going to have long-term benefits for society. Then I think it's also, we're in a rather interesting situation with Bitcoin. It has encountered resistance at 14,000, 13,000, 12,000, 11,000, 10,000 on June, July, August, September, and October. Well, if that consistency were to remain credible, then or in place, it would be encountering resistance at 9,000 in November. And it has not done that. We've only got 3 full days of trading left in order for it to rally over $2,000 in order to encounter resistance. What this is, I think, is probably a better example of is that eventually in a downtrend, people start losing patience, and the price is now back below the trend mean. There is anticipation in the market that the price would do phenomenally well going into the halvening, which is going to be probably in May of next year. That is when the reward for mining halves. That will obviously then make the Bitcoin already in existence more valuable because it limits supply. It does seem that there is some efforts underway to try and push some of the miners out of business in order to, it's sort of like a winner-takes-all enterprise to see who's going to become the most efficient miner. That is potentially also one of the factors in why, for example, NVIDIA has been doing better. The share has rebounded over the course of the last few weeks, few months, probably more accurately. And while there is a short-term overbought condition, then it really can be given the benefit of the doubt, provided it is holding the region of the trend mean. And of course, that's one of the big graphics card producers for cryptocurrency mining. As long as the 9,000 level isn't penetrated, then Bitcoin is still in a downtrend. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.